What is true service of humanity? That's what we will be considering today. When we speak of serving humanity, serving our fellow men, many ideas comes to mind. Many endeavors, philanthropic work being done by excellent men and women, organizations. For example, feeding and clothing the poor and the shelterless, providing shelter to them. If someone thinks illiteracy is what is causing the problems in the society, then they build educational institutions, schools for children, schools for the poor children, employment opportunities, building of skills, helping the physically and the mentally disabled, aiding the diseased and the helpless. Look at the great work done by Baba Amte in rehabilitation, empowerment of poor people suffering from leprosy. So social amelioration is being attempted by various men and women who either have sacrificed themselves in this work or their wealth and such other means to set up organizations, institutions to carry on the work even after they have left the world. In all these things, a prerequisite is love for others. None of us are pure evil. We all have a spark of love, or to a greater or larger extent, we have love in our hearts. None of us are pure evil. So our limited view, limited ideas make that love express itself to either only one's own nation, or one's own religion, or one's own sect, or some other community, or some such thing. It limits that love which is in our heart to a small subsection of the whole humanity and all sentient beings. So there is a very nice verse quote given in one of the at the front of the ULT pamphlets, which is, "He who loves lives. He who loves himself lives in hell. He who loves another lives on earth. He who loves all others lives in heaven. He who loves lives." So in these various efforts that are made to make the world a better place, what are the initiatives that we can engage in? What are the efforts that we will support and stand shoulder to shoulder with those brave souls who are doing so much work for the welfare of others, especially those who are less privileged and who are vulnerable? Gandhiji was asked this question, and he gave his deepest social thought as a response to the questioner. You know what he says? He gives us a talisman, a philosopher's stone, a touchstone, which we can apply to see whether apply this touchstone to any of the social work and find its true value, true worth. He says this: "I will give you a talisman. Whenever you are in doubt, or when the self becomes too much with you, apply the following test. Recall the face of the poorest and the weakest man whom you may have seen, and ask yourself if the step you contemplate is going to be of any use to him. Will he gain anything? Will it restore him to a control over his own life and destiny? In other words, will it lead to Swaraj for the hungry and spiritually starving millions? Then you will find your doubts and yourself melt away. This is the talisman that Gandhiji gives. So there are two things we can do in our attempt to serve humanity, serve our fellow men. One is addressing the immediate pain that is there, immediate problem that we see. If it is in our means to do something about it, we have to engage with it, help, do what we can in money, time, effort, if nothing, just a kind word. Immediate addressing. Apart from this, there is that other greater, deeper, more important work of addressing the cause of the problem. What is it that led to this kind of condition to the person, individual or collectively? So that must be sought, that must be addressed, for and that will lead to a long-lasting, permanent solution. So HPB gives very important teachings in this respect of what shall we do to our fellow men? World improvement. How do we contribute to world improvement? A questioner asks this question. Let me read the question first. He is like one of those deluded so-called sannyasis who think that one has to work for one's own spiritual advancement, moksha, and what the world is engaged in, how does it matter to me? All these worldly pursuits and a false sense of this is all illusion. Why should we engage with it? That kind of attitude, that kind of thinking. So the questioner asked this: shall we now nevertheless assist all our fellow men indiscriminately in their worldly affairs? Shall we occupy ourselves with their national and individual karma in order to help them to improve the world and to live happily in it? Shall we strive with them to realize socialistic problems, to further science, arts and industries, to teach them cosmology, evolution of man, universe, etc.? Or on the other hand, shall we only do the best we can to show our fellow men the road of wisdom out of the world and as straight as possible towards the acknowledged goal of absolute existence, which is nirvana? Shall we consequently only work for those who are willing to get rid of all individual existence and yearning to be delivered from all selfishness, from all strivings, who are longing only for eternal peace? What shall we do? This is the question that was raised. HPB, the teacher, gives very, very important teaching in response to this. You know what she says? My reply is this: nothing of that which is conducive to help man, collectively or individually, to live not happily, but less unhappily in this world, ought to be indifferent to theosophist occultists. We cannot be indifferent to any of these endeavors. It is no concern of his whether his help benefits a man in his worldly spiritual progress. It is not our concern to judge. His first duty is to be ever ready to help if he can, without stopping to philosophize. Practical, actual work is what is expected from us, putting it into action. Elsewhere she says, in the same article, she says, to feel compassion without an adequate practical result ensuing from it is not to show oneself an altruist, but the reverse. So you feel compassion, but you don't express it. Your life doesn't conform to it. You don't act on those impulses. Then you are not an altruist, you are its opposite, she says. Real self-development on the esoteric line is action. Inaction in a deed of mercy becomes a deadly sin. And in Key to Theosophy, she says that whole object of existence, you have to act. Intention is not what is expected. I have good intention. It does not mean anything. It does not come to anything. So, in this respect, related to this, there is a beautiful story that she quotes in another article of Christmas time. This is Christmas time. And in that story, the God has sent his angels to the world to go and record all the deeds of charity, mercy, goodness that people do on that evening and bring it back to heaven as a sacrifice to the God. So all the angels go to various parts of the world. One of the angels comes to a cathedral, richly attired, grand, and all silken robes and candles and heavenly music orchestra is all going on. And all the congregation is there. People are seated and they all are chanting prayers to the Almighty. And the angel is standing next to the priest, looking at everybody, looking at everybody's heart. And there is not a single act or thought that the angel can see, which it can record with its pencil on its tablet as a charitable deed. And then the priest begins his sermon and then gives a wonderful sermon, discourse. Even then, not a single act to be entered into the tablet. And then they all finish it, greet each other, walk out of the cathedral, and while they are walking out, on the other side of the road, they find a wretched woman, a poor beggar, who with her thin, famished hand, is begging. And all of them will pull their clothes apart and so that it doesn't get soiled by, contaminated with her touch. And they walk away soon. And the angel is still has nothing to write. The whole slate is empty. Then there comes a sailor, a drunken sailor, who's staggering on the road. He comes in front of the cathedral and sees this poor wretched woman, crosses to the other side, staggering, and puts his hand into his pocket, takes out a couple of pennies and, "Take, you wretched girl." He puts it, and then the angel quickly writes down this and say, "Now my note is full," and flies back to heaven. So the story she quotes to show that it's not external rituals. So it's not what we do as rituals and outside acts that matter as much as the feeling that is there in our hearts, right? So a true student who is really concerned about the misery that he sees he not only engages in action, practical action, in helping those who are around him, he goes to the other deeper step, which is seeking the cause of misery, the cause of suffering, cause of misery. What is it that led to this? That is what he seeks. Because all the conditions that we find ourselves in as a society, and the injustices that we see, exploitation that we see, the poor poverty and the misery of the millions that we see, where do all these arise from? They are not accidents. They are not accidents. They are the results of the ideas, the thoughts that we hold in our minds, individually and collectively. So you may change the government, replace one party with another. You may change an economic system from another ism, remove capitalism, put some communism, socialism. You may do all those changes, but it will be like old wine in new bottle. Old wine in new bottle. That's all. It is the same set of crooks. One set of crooks will be replaced by another set of crooks. Because the ideas that we hold is what results in action, and this action is what will bring about results, effects. So a true student of life tries to address that deeper aspect. Look at the case of, take the case of Buddha. He was a prince, heir to the throne, and he had all the riches. He was completely moved, his heart melted for the misery of the world. Now, he could have become a king and dispersed all his richness to the poor, created shelters, houses. He could have done anything that he wanted with the riches that he had. But what is the path he chose? He chose to find the root cause of death, disease, decay, sickness, error, and address that root cause. That's what a true student does. Not that the efforts that are done on the physical plane as charity is to be despised. No, not at all. But while engaged in it, there is that other deeper, more important task of addressing the hearts and minds of the soul. That is what we must engage in. So all true teachers say, speak about charity. You take any religion, you speak about charity and being charitable to others in our actions and in our thought. But they also speak of the more important aspect of reforming oneself. World reform comes through self-reform. With we ourselves being unfit, what contribution can we do to the world to make its conditions better? So they always pointed to self-reform. Mr. Judge writes this beautiful verse which summarizes this in his article. He says, study all scriptures written near and far, worship all images and saints of earth, but if you do not study who and what you are, all your vast studies are as nothing worth. Study of the self. All our problems arise from within our hearts. The problems of our fellow men, we may trace it to various causes, but the ultimate cause you find is misconceptions, wrong ideas. Action along those wrong ideas is what is putting all of us in, what is what puts us in misery. So here we have to understand that, look at this. Religion, which was supposed to answer this, respond to such sentiments of man, itself has become materialistic. Spirituality itself has become self-centered. Religion, what is it now? It's all about, how can I obtain security for myself and my family? How is it that I can obtain some job or some position or some such thing, or retain and secure what I have? How is it that I can ward off evil for myself? Centered around oneself. Spirituality. How is it that I can obtain peace of mind? Oh, there's so much anxiety in my work. How is it that I can overcome this anxiety, obtain calmness of mind, happiness? The least idea about concern for others. No idea about concern for others. All again self, centered around self. And the teachers say that this very idea of self, selfishness, self-centeredness, that is the cause of all your unhappiness and misery. you think, you, they say that we think we are separate from each other, that I have to assert myself, obtain it, I can enjoy things for myself as an individual unit, apart from all others, unconcerned about others, indifferent to others, I can obtain happiness for myself and my family. They say this is delusion. This idea arises from misconception. And you are working constantly, expending all your mental, physical energy in this wrong direction. And therefore you are producing causes which puts you in misery. It is this ignorance of interconnectedness that is, that causes misery. So, this materialism which has infected our soul, you know, very beautifully, you know, this one small section in Shakespeare's The Tempest explains this condition of ours. You know, there is a situation arises such that the king is asleep and the king's brother who is eyeing the throne is awake. And the duke is also awake. The duke is a usurper. He has actually done treachery to his own brother and by force and by cunningness obtained the position of duke. So the duke and the king's brother are awake, and then the duke is instigating the king's brother, saying, what are you doing? The king is asleep. You just give me one command with this 3 inches of iron, the 3 inches of blade, I can finish him off. And then you will become the king. Look at me, what I have done. I was a servant to my brother, but what did I do? I, with some magic, I ensured that my brother is exiled, and now see how the robes sit on my shoulder, all the servants that I have, all the riches I have. Look at me and learn from me, he says. Then the king's brother asks, yeah, I remember that you had done this to your brother. What happened to your conscience? Did not your conscience speak to you? Then the duke says, conscience, sir, what is it? What is it? If it were to be an ulcer in my feet, it would have at least made me wear a slipper. But sir, he says, I feel not this deity in my bosom. I feel not this deity in my bosom. I don't feel conscience at all in my bosom. He says, between me and Milan, what one conscience? Bring 20 conscience. It would melt before it molests me. Like candies, it would melt before me, molests me. So this describes the condition that we as a society are getting into because of materialism. What is conscience? How does it matter what kind of life I lead? What my life and my buying choices, the decisions that I make, the endeavors that I do, how does it impact others? Who bothers about it? How does it matter? I will obtain what I want. That is the condition that we are in because of this ignorance. And that very same attitude, that very same ideas which inspire us to do these demonical things, as Krishna says, This is the root cause of all problems. All the social evil that we find is rooted in this. So, His Holiness the Dalai Lama says, you cannot at once become selfless. First step was for you to understand that your happiness is interconnected, interdependent, interwoven with happiness of others. So as a first step, work for the happiness of others, those around you. Don't infringe on their rights. Don't do things which harm them. Don't do things to obtain something for yourself which would put them into misery. This is enlightened self-interest. You have self-interest, fine. But have a better self-interest, enlightened self-interest. He says this. We cannot be useful to ourselves unless we are also useful to others. No amount of trying to secure oneself will work, will bring us actual security and peace and happiness to oneself and one's family, as long as we are creating causes which puts others in insecurity, impoverishes others, which puts others' life in misery, and then we go and pray to some imaginary God, who can see? So he says this, we cannot be useful to ourselves unless we are also useful to others. Whether we like it or not, we are all connected, and it is unthinkable to be happy by all oneself, all by oneself. Anyone who is only concerned by his own well-being will suffer eventually. Even if we decide to remain selfish, let us be intelligently selfish. Let us help others. This is what he says. Going further in our philanthropic efforts to help others, we must examine our motives. See, because it is not only action which produces the result, the real action is on the mind and heart, in our feelings. We may be donating millions of dollars or doing great social work in the eyes of the world, but what is the motive which moves us to do all these things? That is what determines the effects. This Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita while describing the three kinds of gifts, the gift we do give to others, right? And charity is a gift. Our work for others is a gift in that sense. The three kinds, he says. He says, those gifts which are bestowed at the proper time to the proper person and by men who are not desirous of a return are those of the sattva quality, good and the nature of truth. But that gift which is given with the expectation of a return from beneficiary or with a view of spiritual benefit flowing therefrom or with reluctance is of rajas quality, bad and partaketh of untruth. For example, I do a good but expect something in return, whether it may be a favor tomorrow from the person or not physical favor, spiritual return of punya. I will gain some punya and that will put me in heaven, or that will come back to me in next life and put me in better conditions. Rajasic. Gifts given out of place and season and to unworthy persons without proper attention and scornfully are of tamas quality, wholly bad and of nature of darkness. So when we do something to others, when we help others, what is the motive? We must ask ourselves. Next point is, see, the teacher in the same article responding to the questioner, that questioner is saying we should sacrifice to the eternal, our life should be sacrificed to the eternal. What do we have to do with the world and the suffering phenomenon? It's all worldly, it's all illusion. So the teacher makes a very important correction here. She says this, you speak of sacrifice to the eternal, right? She says, esoterically, there is no other way, means or method of sacrificing oneself to the eternal than by working and sacrificing oneself for the collective spirit of life embodied in and represented in its highest divine aspect by humanity alone. Where do you find the eternal? It's not an abstract idea, concretely expressed in your fellow men. That's what Gandhiji says. If you cannot find God in the eyes of your fellow men, what are you looking at God elsewhere? You won't find it if you don't find it in your neighbor. So this is a very important thing to be borne in mind. So, as the teacher says, there is a spiritual humanity within physical humanity. There is a spiritual part of us residing within the physical. If we address merely the physical conditions, the diseases, the troubles of the physical body, that is fine. But who addresses, or how do we address the inner man in his suffering, which is far more permanent compared to the troubles of the body? The troubles of the body, what is it? At the end of the death, over, body is memory, all, everything is gone. But the causes which led to that suffering in that life still remains. And the same causes will put that soul in another body, same conditions, say, or similar conditions and similar bondage. So unless we recognize the spiritual humanity within the physical humanity, physical mankind within physical mankind, then no true service of humanity is possible. And again, just to clarify, not that the efforts which are done by the many brave men and women are to be despised, but the causes have to be sought. As Buddha says, the whole life is an outcome of our former lives. The bygone wrongs will breed misery and sorrow. The bygone good will breed happiness. So this must be brought to the mind of men and women. Mere emotional goodness without knowledge of how to help, as Krishna says, proper gifts given to the right person at the right time. What is it? Knowledge. How to help others? What is it that binds the soul? So we have to acquire knowledge in order to help others. And without knowledge, it's said somewhere that mere good intentions without knowledge will lead to sorry work sometimes. Mere emotional desire to help cannot sustain for long. It will soon be overtaken by other things and be defeated. So true service to humanity requires knowledge. Knowledge of what? Knowledge of the inner man, is his source, purpose, destiny, and the laws which govern the universe. It is the ignorance of these laws which leads us to commit mistakes, and by doing that we put ourselves in dire circumstances. So as the voice of the silence beautifully says, teach to eschew all causes. Eschew is to avoid. Teach to eschew all causes. The ripple of effect, as a great tidal wave, thou shalt let run its course. So we don't tinker with merely the effects. Address the causes. This is what, for a person who is thus devoted to the good of humanity, who with altruism seeks for knowledge so that with that knowledge he may help the struggling souls which are struggling to express nature in this animal form and animal matter. One who is devoted to this aim of furthering the purposes and the evolution of the soul, for such a person, the whole nature opens up. There is no secrets of nature for him. What bars us from obtaining true insight into nature, its workings, its forces and faculties, powers, is our own selfishness. It is selfishness which bars us. So for a completely unselfishly devoted person who is truly devoted to sacrifice to the eternal, as the teacher said, for him nature opens wide before thee the secrets of her, all her secrets. So one such great being says, a great soul, he says, it is he alone who has the love of humanity at heart, who is capable of grasping thoroughly the idea of a regenerating practical brotherhood, who is entitled to the possession of our secrets. What secrets? Secrets of whole nature of yourself, which gives you omniscience, omnipotence. Such a person who is devoted to the welfare of humanity is only eligible for that knowledge. He alone, such a man, will never misuse his powers, as there will be no fear that he should turn them to selfish ends. A man who places not the good of mankind above his own good is not worthy of becoming our chela. He is not worthy of becoming higher in knowledge than his neighbor. So a true student of life who wants to serve humanity in the highest, in its highest sense, he will never be passive or indifferent to anything. As the teacher said, he will not be, oh, it's all worldly pursuit, oh, worldly happiness, why should I, oh, it is their karma, his karma. All these are ignorance. He will not say those things. He will be more active than the busiest businessman in working for humanity. That's point number one. Point number two, he seeks knowledge, because without knowledge, impossible to help. We may be doing harm without knowledge, trying to help others. So he seeks knowledge for what? To be the better able to help and teach others. Point number two. Point number three, his whole effort will be firmly rooted in self-reform. He does not go about trying to change the world outwardly. He knows unless the knots of the heart within oneself is untied, cut, there is no way that he can truly help humanity. So all his efforts are endeavored in overcoming his defects, his weaknesses, and cultivating their opposites, which are divine virtues. And this he does in his daily life. He does not abandon his post and run to the Himalayas or to ashram. He knows that he is placed in life in exactly the best circumstances, conditions necessary for him for true growth. So he understands this, recognizes this, does not fight with his circumstances, rather sees inside, reverts his gaze inwardly. And by bringing about this transformation in himself, by taking knowledge and bringing about reform in one's own thinking and living, he silently but potently brings about transformation in others. Without speaking a word, he brings about transformation in others. Because on the plane of mind and heart, there is no obstacles, separateness at all. So when one unit of the whole takes up this task earnestly and in his or her own personal life brings about this change to whatever extent, to that extent that soul has lessened the burden of the all soul, of the all beings, the karma of the whole, and to that extent provided an impulse for all to turn one's face and mind towards the right direction. What a great service it is. Unknown, unperceived, but very potent changes from within outwards. So an engineer need not give up his job and wear a yellow robe and go to ashram. A doctor need not give up taking care of his patients and go to Himalayas. While doing the duties of life, actively engaged in the duties of life, purify one's motives. And with the fellow men with whom we come in contact with through our work, through our family ties, through our various engagements in social life, bring about transformation. One of the masters says to his disciple that, somewhat to the effect that, you think your past year is wasted only in doing quote unquote family duties? What better opportunity, what greater opportunity to establish yourself on the true path of the service of humanity? What greater opportunity? If you need not go to tsunami affected area or earthquake affected area and involve yourself in work. Yes, if you are able to do, if your life allows it, if your circumstances allows it and it's your duty to do, yes. But greater work can be done in your own position, the place that we are, position and the post that we are placed in by our karma. So these are some thoughts that regarding the true service of humanity. The ideal that we have before us are those who have sacrificed nirvana itself. Highest bliss, nirvana, peace, happiness, that itself is sacrificed for the service of humanity. Those are ideals. So let's consider any questions or